Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, episode 90. The Next Generation, season 2, episode 13. Time Squared.
You don't know what I'm talking about. They're locked into a single intent, unable to change. Unable to alter any of your previous actions.
I have to leave. There's no other way.
There must be one.
But it would never work.
What is it? What would never work?
I have to leave.
What was the other choice? We can't fight. We can't escape. We can't go forward.
No, no. We can't go forward. That would destroy the Enterprise.
Is that it? Is that the other choice?
I must leave.
No. Captain Picard! I cannot allow you to leave. Before we can go forward, the cycle must end.
It's got Star Trek episode 90.
Yeah.
Wow.
90th episode.
Wow. We're almost at 100. Well, we ought to do something special for 100, I suppose.
Can we have some cake?
Yeah. I mean, that's not special for our listeners, unless listeners enjoy listening to us eat cake.
Can do a video podcast.
They can enjoy it. They can enjoy us getting intoxicated on cake. Like in those, when the radio show does the drinking episodes.
I think we did a drinking episode.
Where we just,
you weren't there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were out. Jesse and I traveled to Ireland and went to an Irish pub to discuss Voyages.
It was noisy.
Fairhaven and Spirit Folk.
And you had their Guinness.
No, we drank a bunch of Irish whiskey, actually.
Right on.
A variety of Irish whiskeys. So we'll have to do something special for episode.
Did you go to the 100. Cliffs of Did you go to the Cliffs of Dover?
That's in England.
Yeah, that's
it.
I just, you know. It's a song. It's just like song with that's all the guitars are like.
Oh, right.
Star Trek.
Yes.
Times Square. The Next Generation.
Did you catch a whiff of them bowls? Those bowls that Riker was using. All the dishes in the...
A whiff of them?
All the dishes in the Trek world are crazy. But I would tell you, those mugs with the wide bottoms, those were good. But those bowls were all rolling around stupid. I'm just saying.
You really ought to be sitting out on a front porch somewhere. Explaining this to passersby.
About bowls, why their bowls are stupid.
There's a couple of things to discuss, I think, about this opening bit.
There's a lot to discuss about this fucking opening bit.
I just want to say that Trek... picks a very has they put a unique effort into the dishware that they choose on the show, and I appreciate that. It's pretty cool.
And apparently, it was a heck of a job, though I'm sure fun for the prop folks to scour all the thrift stores and yard sales and where they would get the most unique stuff at those types of places.
That's pretty cool.
But it only became aggravating when they had something that they liked and wanted to reuse, but obviously you often need more than the one prop, and then so the thing they got for a few dollars would cost them hundreds of dollars. To replicate. All right, so what are some of your complaints? I want to leave it to y'all, because I have not complaints about this episode, not complaints about this first scene, just some stuff that is fucking perplexing about this particular opener with Riker, the eggs.
When it starts out, Dr. Pulaski comes in and says something about omelets, but he didn't make omelets, he just scrambled
some
eggs.
Everyone's talking about omelets. Everyone's talking about he's making omelets, and he's not and making fucking omelets.
He didn't make any omelets, and he just made scrambled eggs in there.
He made some half-ass scrambled
They're just
eggs.
Plain. He didn't put anything in them.
He just cracked some alien eggs.
Vegetables.
What the fuck was that?
And so that brings me to
hot sauce.
My point is, like, when Geordi was like, ooh, he made that face someone would make if something was like too spicy, but he didn't put any spice in there. What was Geordi wincing at?
Well, they were alien eggs.
It was a disgusting
egg. It was just a weird egg.
They were from a weird animal.
He said there was O1 eggs.
O1, yeah.
So we don't know if anyone's ever had O1 eggs before, but like apparently you can eat them. I don't know. But Worf thought they were a warrior's eggs. You could tell because like he was digging them.
It was funny to watch Michael Dorn just scarfing down was obviously just some scrambled eggs.
Worf probably doesn't eat chicken. Though.
And Riker was giving him some look while he's doing it at first. Like at first, Riker was like, "What is this motherfucker doing?" And then he was like, "Delicious, yeah." Then he's like, "Ah, cool." But anyways, my point was I was talking about how they were making faces, but like you said, they didn't put anything in them. They were Pulaski was walking in there with some beer. It looked like a 40 ounces.
Right. So that was
some sort of whiskey.
Is it really breakfast? It's not really breakfast. They're just getting together because Riker like found these eggs and he's like, I got real eggs and I can cook them.
Getting together because they're commanding.
I'll make you an omelet.
Their commanding officer pressured them into hanging out in his quarters eating some alien bullshit that he did. He's all acting like he's a good cook and they're all like, well, you have a deft hand. Where'd you learn to cook? He didn't fucking learn to cook because he can't cook fucking eggs.
Yeah. How do you fuck up eggs? But I mean, the thing
is, recall just Picard, he fucked up the pizza too. Didn't he like burn the tomatoes on the pizza?
And there was too small.
Oh, that's right.
But so are we going to assume that the eggs tasted bad just because they were from a weird alien?
That's what I was going with. I didn't necessarily think that Riker was a
because he did
cook.
Say he did. Because
I'm basing it on the fact that he's saying he's making omelets and then all he's doing is cracking an egg and sort of lightly wiggling them. He didn't like whisk that shit up or nothing proper. I mean, he whisked it a little bit.
But it
was all slow whisking.
That is a problem.
How do you flow? You don't get the air bubbles in there. Some sort of whisk it faster.
Prop versus script conflict there.
Well, he was saying a cook's only as good as his ingredients, but that's kind of presumptuous because like he's blaming his ingredients for holding him back, and it's obvious he was completely
unfazed by the whole thing. He's like, well, I'm not the cook, and I don't give a shit. Like, I got you guys to come over here and make some eggs.
That's what
you
didn't
like. I don't care. Like, yeah, then, like own... they get summoned to the bridge, and it's like, I got something else to do now.
His whole deal is getting getting people to like follow his orders.
I think Riker.
That's all he cares about.
Riker. I love Riker, but sometimes he acts sort of like your typical. Like empowered white male, in that he's handsome, he's got a position of authority, and he just is like, oh yeah, I'm good at cooking fucking omelets, check this out. And the people are like, all right, I bet he's not even any good at trombone.
No, oh, man, can't
he's
say
not that,
that
great.
He's just like tooting a loon. Everyone's like, oh, you're great at trombone.
Pulaski, yeah, do you see the door shut in her face too?
There was multiple things with the door where everyone's coming in and the door keeps closing. Yeah. It was like a supermarket.
And
it's all like, ah.
She was saying that we've gotten away from breaking bread by making friendship and community through breaking bread. I don't know. I didn't know what they meant by that. Does she mean they just don't eat together anymore?
It didn't make sense because that's what that means. They do eat together. They eat together all the time. It's just complicated food.
They don't make it. Yeah, they don't make it like in the same way they get there.
I think they just don't. Nobody ever eats with Dr. Pulaski because she's, you know, unpleasant. Also.
She's always trying to put people in their place. She's like, you know, if the captain doesn't do what I want, I can just relieve him of duty because I'm a doctor. Okay. Can you do that? Like, why wouldn't it be up to Troy if someone was going to make that decision that he wasn't mentally capable?
That's
wouldn't that
Troy.
Be
a
Troy decision?
Yeah, but traditionally it's the medical officer. Yeah,
so the Navy tradition is the doctor, but...
Yeah, so that's what I was wondering, because I'm not clear on that, but you're saying that is how it is in the military.
Troy can, like, magically tell by reading his mind whether he's, like, insane.
And it's weird...
They've used this in Star Trek before. McCoy mentions it.
It seems outdated, though, to use, like, a medical doctor to try to... To try to like say if somebody's mentally fit or
not.
This
was 1989.
Yeah.
So they were imagining the future, but they weren't imagining hard enough.
But I mean, that's how it is in real life, apparently. And I think that's.
At least in some scenarios, it is. And I must state that I do like Pulaski. I like the character of Pulaski. However, they make it hard for you to like her because she's always like.
She's a fine officer.
She's always treating Data like shit. And in this case, she's all. It's effectively. There's a brief period where she appears to be considering a mutiny against Picard. I know it's not technically a mutiny because she has the authority, but the way the audience receives it is that this character is a threat to Picard's decision making, right? And it's kind of weird in this episode because this episode, which we've done very little to describe yet, but there is that moment where not only does Pulaski talk to Troy about the fact that she can do this and that this is sort of into consideration towards the end when she and O'Brien come and they see future Picard all like slumped over in the shuttle, it seems like that's the next scene is going to be her trying to take Picard out of commission and him having to argue like, no, I figured it out. Finally, I figured out the deal, but it doesn't happen. So I don't know. It was just an odd way to write her in this episode. It's just sort of antagonistic.
This whole episode felt like it was one of those things where the ending could live independently of a different episode because all the stuff that was happening, I don't even know if I'd call it like a, it almost felt like a red herring. It's like but it wasn't even quite that because it didn't really lead you down a path. It was just, they were musing about things, you know, they were like talking about like, Well, yeah. Maybe the alien wants this. Why is the alien here? What does it want to do for us?
Nobody knows really what happened.
Like, nothing. There's nothing. And I understand. I respect that. That maybe don't need to explain everything that happens, but what happened?
I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I think that's cool, but I think that they can focus on. I don't know. The episode was really about Picard and him having to deal with self-doubt and an impossible situation where he has to look at this version of himself that he's like, I see nothing in common of myself with this guy. Basically, him trying to distance himself because all that...
He looks disgusted at one point.
Yeah, he was disgusted. Mm. For all he knows, he's like a coward Picard. And like, you know... Look at me. And he's all fucked up and a coward. And so Picard felt really insecure about that. It was just sort of like trying... Picard like... But nothing was sort of made. There was no effort to make. They kept talking about you got to break, you know, do something different, right? But what did they really do that was different? All he did was shoot Picard and kill him, right?
Well, he had an extra Picard this time. Right?
And why did he fucking kill him? I guess just to make doubly sure that nothing happened.
I'm not even sure that he meant to kill him. I mean, it's a little unclear whether, because remember, this future Picard was out of whack already. I know he was quote unquote getting better, but
that didn't make sense either. Like, why does Pulaski know? Okay. Like, when
he was sticking it to Pulaski because he was like, Pulaski, come and get your patient. I shot him.
I think there's two things going on here.
They apparently don't know how time travel much. When was the last time there was time
they didn't
travel?
Know about? They should have known about the flux capacitor because that was a few years before this aired.
Was the last
which
time,
is what makes time travel possible?
Was the last time they used time travel? It was in TOS or was
no? It would have been Star Trek 4, I think.
Okay, yeah, that's what I'm. Yeah,
I mean, in terms of the Trek world, because Star Trek 4 came out in 86.
Yeah, yeah.
This
because they mentioned something about.
Yeah, I totally forgot about the movie. Yeah.
I mean, they did some other.
There was a mention here about, you know, shooting around a planet, slingshotting around a star,
which is the Star Trek 4 style. Yeah.
And that was weird. Can a non-warp ship go to warp? I thought warp wasn't just a speed. It was like aren't you fucking up the fabric of the ship?
They state that in this episode that the shuttle couldn't have done that because it can't do warp.
But Riker talks about, well, what if we slingshot? Or no, Picard or Riker.
Well, Riker mentioned the slingshot, but Picard then makes the point. He's like, yeah, but it doesn't have warp, so you need warp to get even up to the point. But I think there's a couple things going on here. One is that this is still early enough in TNG and early enough in sort of the sci-fi genre, or at least the popular sci-fi genre, where it was okay to do sci-fi, quote-unquote sci-fi things without any particular explanation, right?
Yeah, so I totally agree.
The positive energy versus negative polarity of the energy.
Yeah, that didn't make any sense.
Make sense, but at least you could be like, well, maybe I just don't know enough about electricity. But then the medicine works backwards?
Yeah, it's like because everything was out of phase in terms of time. What about
that all
this?
Doesn't make any sense.
Like, yeah, she was saying they're out of phase.
He's
with
not
themselves.
Traveling backwards in time.
So how could... Well, he went backwards in time, but Star Trek 4...
No, I know, but he's not, like, continuing to travel backwards
right? You know. Yeah, he's just there, right? And there's been no establishment before or since that they haven't really talked about this idea that when you go through time, you become this weird, like, out of phase character where stimulants make you fall asleep, and negative polarity makes the shuttle positive. Why does it matter? I know those things. A lot of those things. Some at a certain point they do push it. Mm-hmm. You're just like, come on, that's enough. But it's okay not to focus on that. But if you're not going to focus on that, then why put so much focus on all these ideas that don't go anywhere?
And I think I have a more concrete explanation in addition to the one I just provided, which is a behind the scenes thing that I read on Memory Alpha that suggests that the writer Morris Hurley, he wrote the story. Apparently, he was actually really annoyed because, as originally conceived, this episode ended with Q appearing and basically saying, I did all this to fuck around with you and test you, and it being kind of like a rough draft version of what ends up happening in All Good Things. If you recall, in All Good Things, Q ultimately is testing Picard to see if he can apprehend a paradox. Mm-hmm. Now, this isn't quite a paradox, but this is kind of, can Picard do the opposite of what he thinks he should do?
Real quick, it's funny to think like, oh, well, if Q was involved, this would make a lot more sense.
Exactly. You know? Because Q was written in to be the reason why all this stuff was going on, yet another in the tests, in the long run of tests. I mean, this would have been early on, of course, but the tests of Picard and or humanity by Q. But Gene Roddenberry apparently insisted that it be removed. The writer was really annoyed by that because he was like, you know, the ending doesn't make any sense without Q. I wrote this ending for Q and it doesn't make any sense. So supposedly that was an aggravation that Maurice Hurley had.
What was it at the end was Picard was saying something to that effect, wasn't he? He was just saying, like, was this a test or was this anything? Because it didn't really make sense.
Was a conscious entity in control of this? There's a line earlier on about that. Where maybe a conscious entity is controlling these events.
Yeah, and because it seems like there would have to be a cue, because this episode, it's like, well, don't leave the thing. Go through the thing. Why? Does it really need to scan you or kill you?
Yeah, that's what the writer said. He's like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, why would going through the thing work now?
Yeah, right. It's like, well, either we scan you or we're going to kill you. But when they're talking about, like, when they go back in time, when he goes back in time, right, that was the warning that some bad shit was going to go down. And so it would be kind of a coincidence to have this time shit happen. Like, it's like always like, oh, we got this anomaly that should have killed us in 2 seconds. Luckily for us, someone from the future appeared out of nowhere and decided, hey, this is going to happen. And the dilemma, of course, is should we do it or shouldn't we do it? Because we don't know who to believe. But that's still better than not having anything, maybe. I don't know. That's the question, right? Is it better Picard to know? Or
write
Picard,
us in that feedback at itsgotstartrek.com and let us know if that is indeed the question.
Is it better for Picard to have heard the future or better for him to have heard or not heard the future? I say it's better for him to have heard the future. Because that way, for some reason,
not just hearing the future. He has a spare Picard. I mean, I know he doesn't use it. He's shooting him, but he does have that spare Picard.
They used Patrick Stewart's twin brother, Steve.
They could have tossed him out of the back.
Steve Stewart.
Sorry. But yeah, they could have just tossed a future Picard out the airlock and been like, all right, here you go, alien. Yeah. Didn't work. You want another one?
I think
maybe that'll work. Maybe they'll just pile up.
Picard was planning to kill that dude all along, I think, because that's why
he wanted to from the get-go.
He hated that guy. And yeah, at the end, he was like, don't bother us. Don't call us. I'll call you. Leave us alone. We need to be alone for a minute. And he knew he was going to shoot the guy. He was like, if this guy doesn't tell me what the other option is. I don't know at what point Picard got in his head that there was a second option, but
it's kind of funny though, because he's Picard, and if the other Picard thought of the other option, why didn't this Picard? Now you could say this Picard didn't think of that option because his timeline has been interfered with by the presence of future Picard coming back and confusing him, so he doesn't think to come up with the other idea, but it's still his own idea.
Precisely. You know, before he went to the sick bay for the final time, he was giving the fucking saying to Riker, it's like, you know what? I think I need to get in the shuttle and leave.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, that's exactly what you're not supposed to do. The one thing you don't do is you don't get in the shuttle. No, but I have to do it to save the Enterprise. Didn't you see what happened?
Troy is all like, yeah, he wants you. And he's like, do you think it would help if I left the ship? And she's like, yes, I totally did.
Yeah, I know.
They wanted to like stay and study the vortex, and like they were like,
no, maybe we should leave.
Yeah, it's like, maybe we should leave. It's like, no, don't you want to see what it's like? It's like, they just can't help themselves. It's like, this is the Enterprise. Like, right. We're supposed to be seeing what's up here.
But I was going to say that when he got to the sick bay and the other Picard, that last few scenes, by the way, was very confusing to try to figure out who was saying what, for whatever
when
reason.
When they're in the terminal.
Oh, it was, yeah.
Walking up and down the hallway.
It was messing with me.
Yeah, but
Future Picard was the one who was all refusing to look at the other Picard.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
So P2, Future Picard, P2. So he was saying, like, I got to get to the ship. I got to get to the shuttle. I got to go back out. I got to go back out to the ship. I got a shuttle. And then Picard goes,
you sounded like Jackie Mason for a second.
I got a shuttle.
Who just passed away last week.
But Picard says, don't go back there outside, right? Don't do that because you did that before and you saw what happened. It's just going to happen again. So Picard was right to say that to him. But 5 minutes earlier, he left the bridge basically saying, I'm going to go in the shuttle and get out there. So he wanted to go to the shuttle, but then he saw himself and decided, let's not go to
the
shuttle.
It's
easier to tell someone else to do something than to like make yourself do it. And the hard decision was not going in the shuttle.
Your point is a good one. However, on my second watch, and I've seen this episode a million times before, but man, we're really watching it closely for you guys. And on my second watch, the vibe I got was that Picard is asking those questions, but if you look at the way Stewart is portraying it, he's not going to do that. He's saying, okay, you're telling me to do this, and my feelings are saying to do this, and he walks right down to the shuttle bay and doesn't do that. So I think what we're meant to understand, but is clumsily conveyed or not conveyed sufficiently, is that that's what's happening. That we're meant to think he's going to go do the same thing, but actually he's already decided at that point, I know what I'm going to do. I'm not going to do that.
Just like he had already decided at that point that he was going to...
I'm going to torture twin.
He was going to do mean things to his twin, right. So I guess he had the whole thing planned at that point. I'd be willing to buy that that was just a ruse, but like, why did he need to lie to his... Why did he even need to say it, though?
For dramatic effect? I mean, I agree. It's a bit clumsy. And I think when you think about this, right, this plot is extremely similar to Cause and Effect.
Mm-hmm.
The season 5 TNG episode.
But that one, like, everything's so compact in that one. Yeah. That one's Cause and Effect is when they do the iterations.
There are
right?
significant differences, but we discussed that.
We totally did that
at length in episode 29.
That was the one where they kept cycling through the
main difference period. In Cause and Effect is that as the audience, when we're watching Cause and Effect, we know what's going on. Mm-hmm. The crew does not. So we are watching the crew slowly figure out and work through the process that they are stuck in a time loop. But in this episode, the audience is just as in the dark about what's going on as the crew is. So the vibe is different. I find this episode to be much more like tense and disturbing and upsetting somehow. The cause and effect is really, it's tension filled, but in a different way. And I think it is a much better episode. I think it's a much more refined episode. I really enjoy this episode, but I think I enjoy it better thinking of it almost as a first draft of what cause and effect did. Because cause and effect took sort of a similarish premise that the Enterprise gets destroyed at some point in the future, some of that information goes back in the past somehow, and the crew has to cobble together a way to avoid that fate. But that this one has a lot of loose ends and things that they didn't pick up on or information they didn't convey clearly enough.
So you would find that you enjoy Time Squared more than you enjoyed Cause and Effect?
No. Cause and Effect is a better episode. It is
okay. I thought you were saying this was the better.
No, episode. No, the opposite. Okay. Cause and Effect. This is the one that has all sorts of loose threads and problems, right? It's a second season episode. They're still working out the kinks.
But what you're talking about the detention that they had was like not present in Cause and Effect, and that was cool. But Cause and Effect was just it was such a tight compact episode.
It was so well written.
And there wasn't all this. There wasn't an extraneous stuff. This was like
exactly.
This was like the episode of no payoffs.
This episode, you know? They spend almost a full minute bringing the shuttlecraft into the bay, right? And I it's not that I didn't enjoy it. I do enjoy the slower pace of the episode. But I was thinking about that. I was like, okay, we're just watching Picard give orders, and like, okay.
Now so good.
We'll do the tractor beam.
Oh, and then the second one?
Open the door. And then you see it slowly coming in.
I liked.
And then the doors are like, you know, opening and closing.
I liked how it was like flipping around and then it got all level with like the universe from the first tractor beam. It was perfectly level. Why did they even need that second one? Because that first one could get it where it needed to go. And
you
why
got
would
to
they
see
need a second one?
You got to see the actual tractor beam emitter.
They needed more action in that scene, so they added a second tractor beam.
I think in 1989, this probably blew people's minds.
Yeah.
I was a kid when I watched this, but I don't remember if my mind was blown. Or not.
How about that shuttle bay, huh? You'd think there'd be more doohickeys and wrenches and things in there.
Not on TNG. They keep it clean and smooth.
There's two
carpeting.
Consoles. Two consoles.
Sometimes
maybe there's probably four.
Sometimes they have funny boxes and containers.
They probably have like consoles. I wonder what kind of room they used for that. Like just some studio warehouse.
That's
room?
A set. Yeah, that's a standing set.
They
built that shit.
Yeah, they did.
I don't know. All they had in that shuttle bay was one fucking shuttle. Now, if you don't count future shuttle, they had one shuttle. And what's the deal with shuttles?
What's the deal with shuttles?
So what is the deal?
Which
with
ones
shuttles?
Are the runabouts? Are the runabouts the tiny? You know,
no, runabouts are only on Deep Space Nine. Those are bigger than shuttles.
Yeah. Right. So that's what I was going to ask.
They're warp capable. They've got weapons.
Okay. So that's what I was wondering. Does TNG only have those two seater kind of shuttles? Does it not have bigger ones?
They have bigger ones that come in later that are sleeker and look less TOS-y.
But those aren't runabouts.
They're not runabouts. A runabout is a particular type class.
It's like it's a tiny little fighter transport.
It's like a big shuttle.
It's not meant to be a fighter.
It's not meant to be a fighter, but it can like defend itself.
We only ever see them fire once, which is in the one little ship or whatever that DS9 episode.
But if you were traveling to get to the planet or something, and some asteroids got in your way or some
you'd
shit, you could blast
that,
it.
You'd prefer that to a shuttle. I think the idea is that runabouts are more capable and more fun. They can go longer distance.
They're like ATVs.
Yeah, they got. I know they have a transporter pad in them.
Whoa, they got a They're decked out with its own transporter pad.
They're ready to go.
That's pretty cool.
You can beam onto that shit.
Beam out of there. Some shit goes
out. Fuck out.
Beam around.
They should just put the transporter pad on the seat so you can just beam out of your chair if you need to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that might make me nervous, being like, I could get beamed out
any
second.
You don't have to use the bathroom.
Well, you can get beamed out anyway.
Beam it out your bladder.
You can beam from anywhere.
You can beam out your bladder.
You don't need the transporter pad.
Transporter pad.
You can beam anywhere.
You don't need a transporter pad to beam out your bladder.
Beam
out your bladder.
But a big difference.
Don't need a transport pad to beam out your bladder.
What is this?
Beam out your bladder.
That's another thing you could extol to people as you sit upon the porch. And the people walk along the sidewalk. Beam out your bladder.
Are you one of those porch guys?
Beam out your bladder.
Beam out your bladder.
Beam out your bladder.
It's like, what is he talking about?
Don't mind honey. That's just Dan.
Keep walking.
He's harmless.
Beam out your bladder.
He's harmless.
All right. Yeah. So, yeah, episode. This episode is just a pile of unpaid bills. There's no payoff. No,
It, I think it works in the end. I think you can see the seams. You can see it sort of bursting at the seams where when you know Q was supposed to be in it, that retroactively makes things make more sense. You can also see where it's fluffed out a little bit because, yeah, TNG, of course, went at a slower pace than some of the modern iterations of Star Trek, but not always the motion picture style slow thing like with the shuttlecraft, for example. So it seems like it's padded out a little bit, maybe too. Like they had the 3/4 or 5/6 of a story, and they just had to fluff it out a little. No problem. They have to do that all the time. But I do think it impacts this in terms of classicness level. On the other hand, though, I do enjoy this episode. I enjoy it partly because I think it creeps me the fuck out. I think Patrick Stewart's acting in this is really great.
Oh, that's fantastic. The scene where like
both sides of him being all horrified on the medical table is upsetting.
You see some like Riker veins, I remember, in his head veins.
There's a tremendous Riker amount vein. Of upsetting
so when,
tension in
when,
this episode.
One of my favorite scene, I think, is between
your
him.
Flavor it?
My favorite scene is that it was between him and Riker, and they were just having the lowdowns, getting what's up. And then
the
at one
where
point,
Riker's all leaning forward.
Yeah, the one where Riker's leaning forward. Yep, that one. But at one point, Picard sits down and he starts like musing, and he puts his head in his hands.
Yeah, he's all scratching his
head. Yeah, and that is like that whole exchange is just great.
It's wonderful
because you can tell he's just musing about. He's talking about some kind of Mannheim experiments, but he was talking about the Traveler, and it's like Riker's like, I don't think that's the case here.
Riker's like, what the fuck, you think you're the Traveler now, you asshole?
And Picard just like
piece of shit.
And Picard just like spaces out for a second after he said that, and then he quickly just like points at him and goes, no. Like he's just like, I don't think that's
it's
the
like
case
he
here.
Thought about
no.
it, and he's like, nah,
no,
I probably
course,
didn't
right.
turn into a Traveler.
That didn't happen.
Yeah, so you know, there was a lot of Picard sort of like thinking, and Captain, I think there is one inner instance where you should suppress your natural tendencies. Oh, really? You know, it's just this whole beaten...
The Persian flaw.
Yeah, that Persian flaw. I hadn't heard of that before.
Isn't that a reference to Alexander the Great or something?
Something about, like, Persians like to have flaws or
something like that. write us in at feedback at itsgotstartrek.com and...
What's a Persian flaw?
Illuminate us about the Persian flaw.
Oh,
make us feel better about saying that and because we're presuming it's not some horrifically racist thing to say.
It was basically... people who make shit, they intentionally put a fucked up aspect in it to signify that man is flawed.
Did you look that up?
Yes, I did. I put it in my own words.
I'm so nervous you just made that shit up.
No. Yes, you're just making shit up. Yeah. No, no, Dan.
I was like, don't do that.
That's what it is. And I was listening to some podcasts or something or somewhere where they were saying like there's a reason that
a podcast
where New York has one brick wall, you know, the apartments have one brick wall and the rest is something about making.
I don't understand the reference.
Have you ever seen a New York apartment before?
I've been in New York apartments.
Have you ever heard of the idea that there's
New York City, New York, United States,
New York City?
Have you ever heard of the idea that a lot of them have just one brick wall, like you see the brick.
It's just made out of one big brick.
Well, no, I'm saying the rest of the wall looks like normal drywall or whatever painted wall, but then there's one red brick.
Oh, you mean just
wall.
An exposed brick?
Exposed brick. Yeah.
I don't think that's limited to just New York City.
No, but I think it, like, according to what I heard this person say. They said
on a podcast.
They said it was a new. It sprouted up in New York because of this idea of wanting to have one aspect of it like kind of fucked up to remind you that you're.
Can you just kick
shit.
A hole in the drywall? Is that sufficient? Because that's kind of fucked up. You'll just have like that one fucked up hole in. The
I
drywall.
Have nothing to do with. I've no stake in this. In this potato. I'm just. I don't know.
Wait a second. Do you put steak inside your potato?
That's like, a great like idea.
Beef steak?
You want extra more steak to potato though ratio. You don't want a big old potato with a little steak in it. You want a big steak surrounded by a little potato. Yeah. I'm not talking about like
tater
skins.
How do you get a big
skins.
Steak into a little tomato? I mean, little potato.
A little tomato. That's wild, man.
Mm.
You can use gastronomy to make eggs look like tomatoes or tomatoes look like eggs.
Alien eggs. But there was another point. Gastronomy. In addition to Patrick Stewart's acting, which really, I mean, of course he's brilliant. He's always brilliant. But this was this really gave him an opportunity to do some interesting stuff and made me repeatedly uncomfortable. Both contemporary Picard and future Picard both made me uncomfortable at varying times in this episode. However, I think the other thing that makes me really like this episode is that the actual sci-fi plot of it. Sci-fi plot. That plot ain't right. The plot of having somebody time travel just 6 hours into the future, short duration into the future, is so different than what we're used to seeing, because normally people are traveling, I don't know, 50 years, 100 years, or whatever into
even
the past.
Even Riker was like, aren't we supposed to do this like 20 years from now?
Yeah.
Like, we're not supposed to go through 6 months.
Yeah, it's weird. And you don't see a lot of that. I mean, I don't know how much you saw of that in science fiction prior to this. Maybe you did, but I'm not familiar with that. Write us in at feedback@scottstartrek.com if you have any suggestions.
Of all the things I choose to find hard to believe, like door time travel and all that, who cares? What's the hardest for me to believe is that this was not involved. Q was not involved in this somehow.
Now that I put that in your head, right?
Well, no, but I was already thinking about
something
like,
along those lines.
Yeah,
right?
I wasn't thinking Q before. I was like, it didn't occur to me. Oh,
they
Q would have made sense.
There's zapping Picard, but, and there's no explanation for anything.
Yeah,
it's very Q-ish.
And I was just thinking like, wow, it's really convenient that he was able to get back in time and warn him of this anomaly that has no warning to it. It's like this anomaly literally. Is happening and they couldn't do anything about it, and the only thing that was warning them was Picard, who got sent back in time. It just seemed like a lot to believe. It seemed like a lot I had to put my faith in, and with Q it's all good.
I agree. And but nevertheless, that being all that, putting that in a little bit of a little nicely organized pile and setting it gently to the side where it can be referenced at in the future as needed, that whole 6 hour thing was interesting because it was a different dynamic than we're used to seeing, right? It wasn't traveling back to the 1800s or forward to the 3000s or anything. You know, it was this very self-contained thing.
Do you want to see a gritty like Star Trek movie where they travel back to medieval times or something horrible, and
where they just phaser everybody?
Where they, yeah, and then people get gutted, and maybe they had become they had to be a knight. Of course, Worf has to be a knight for some reason, you know, and
of course,
you know, just because he's a warrior, you know, and he's got some kind of ball and chain flail.
Well, they do
sounds
have a,
miserable.
There is. A,
it would be like all gritty, a weird gritty Star Trek.
You just keep saying gritty.
Yeah, it's gritty.
That's just because everybody.
It's gritty.
Be dirty because it'll be the
but
middle
gritty
age.
Makes me think of a 1970s cop drama gritty with film grain and
right,
you know,
well, just make it in the
people
style
being racist. Serpico
make it in the style of a 70s cop
French
drama
connection.
Make it in the style of a 70s cop drama, but put it in the medieval times with Worf as a knight with a like a ball and chain flail spike thing.
Would it just be Worf or anybody else?
There would be Beverly would be there too.
To be Worf and Beverly Crusher.
Okay, well, that's nonsense.
I'm down. I agree with Jesse. I'm now 100%.
It's okay.
I was mocking you before if you didn't realize that, but now I'm 100% down. I'm 100% down for that. Make it a sitcom.
Yeah.
But still in a 1970s cop movie style.
Yeah.
I corrupt cop style.
That would get the people talking.
But in Deep Space Nine, they have that episode Visionary with O'Brien. That does sort of a similar thing where there's two O'Briens separated by a brief period of time. So that's the other major example I can think of. And it's another Star Trek example. I'm sure there are more out there that I'm either forgetting or haven't been exposed to. And I'd like to hear more about those. But the plot is interesting. It's cool. So that's a big plus. One major minus for me. And it shouldn't be, but it is.
I'm Major Minus. Like the idea is my name is Major Minus.
My Major Minus is my General Minus, my Lieutenant Minus.
Be like Lieutenant.
Remember
Lieutenant
when,
Commander
did,
mine
when, did you see a point where Riker said to Geordi, he goes, Lieutenant. There was a scene, I forget what it was. He's like, Lieutenant. Like, he was trying to, like, tell Geordi, he's like, you're nothing. And I'm everything.
there's a
fact that we invited him, but they're shitty, just so he could give him shitty breakfast. He's like, I made them come over here for this bullshit.
Yeah, because he's Riker. And he's like, he's basically like that character played by John Hamm in 30 Rock, where he's so hot and attractive that nobody has the heart to tell him that he sucks at cooking.
Oh, man.
When sex, he's terrible at sex.
Oh, no. Riker can't be bad at sex.
Yeah. He even doesn't know how to sit down properly. And everyone's like, oh, that's so cool how he sits down.
You remember that Bob's
leg over it.
Remember that Bob's Burger episode with Fred Armisen? He's all like, I'm good at sex.
Yes.
You're bad at sex.
That's an excellent episode of Bob's
Burger.
Very
good at sex.
You are.
Yeah. Yeah. okay, you're saying, wait, your major minus.
My major minus is
major minor.
My colonel minus is
just can't fucking stop.
Is
my ensign minus.
I didn't want to go to ensign. I thought, you know, once you do lieutenant commander as Jesse did, it's hard to
Greenhorn.
Ensign is less funny than lieutenant commander minus.
Greenhorn minus. Lieutenant commander minus.
Greenhorn? You mean like a private?
Lieutenant commander minus is probably funnier.
Yeah. Rear Admiral minus.
Rear Admiral's a funny one.
Rear Admiral minus.
Rear Admiral.
Okay. So
yeah, it is funny.
It is when
stupid.
When Data and Geordi are working on the shuttle and trying to get the power back working in the shuttle. And we already discussed the whole power inverted this way and that way, and they work out that they need to put reverse power or something in there somehow to make the shuttle work. And they're all like, it shouldn't work, but it does.
Yeah, why did... Yeah.
But that's not the minus. That's fine. That's sci-fi
fun. Well,
the
inverter...
That's 80s sci-fi fun. Whatever.
You're talking about how, like, everything up was down and left
exactly.
was right for some reason?
Exactly. Instead of positive, it was negative, and the polarity, and the this, and the that.
Real quick, another thing that sort of reminds me of why did they bother, it was when Geordi was showing the video of the Enterprise blowing up, and he was like... the video quality was pretty shitty, but we went through a phase inverter. It'll get better by a little bit. Why did they even bother with that?
Geordi's anal about these things. And that's the kind of person you want working in engineering.
I think it was just an attempt to give you a sort of a vibe of the episode, give the episode a flavor, a certain aura. Yeah. But it just felt like it was just something like these loose end where you're just like, why'd you bother with that?
It's characterization. For Geordi, they repeatedly show him going above and beyond.
Like, I see where you're coming.
I'm just making that. I'm pulling that out.
Yeah,
out of my rear end.
It doesn't change
your rectum.
I didn't think it was made much sense. But whatever. It just didn't bother me.
But that's not the minus.
That's not the major minus.
The major minus. And I remember this.
You remember the major minus?
As a child, aggravating me.
He remembers the major minus.
I remember. I was a child. I was a young child. I was watching Star Trek: The Next Generation, and this aggravated me. And it was when the power comes back on, and Data does that. Sort of like with his hands, where he's all like, "Oh,
because he solved the problem." He's like, there you go.
But he's like, he did that motion when something starts working, but you don't know exactly why. Mm-hmm. So you put your palms facing upwards towards the sky, right. And your hands out at about a 35 degree angle or something.
Sure.
And you sort of wiggle them a little bit, meaning like,
with that look on your butt, it's a happy feeling.
It's like when you kick the mower and it starts, or you slap the side of your CPU.
It's confusion, but not bad. Huh? It's not angsty confusion. It's like serendipitous.
All right. I guess it works.
It's
like on the
why.
One hand, you're happy it works, but since you don't know exactly
but
why
I don't
it works,
know why.
Yeah, exactly. And that's
it bothered me, but I'm just so happy it works, though. That's all that matters.
But
what if it happens again? I won't be able to fix it.
I remember just thinking that's not a Data motion, right? Yeah. Data.
That's true.
Brent Spiner's still learning the Data vibe.
Right.
And in seasons 1 and 2, there are a number of things. And he did this in that.
Because, it wouldn't. Because
the one with the 1980s people, he did stuff like that, too.
I mean, you could just. But you could just say, you know, it's just.
Of course,
he's just imitating stuff, and he's getting better at it over time, I guess. But yeah, I do see though the characters that happens a lot with shows where characters are actors are trying to feel out their characters, and figuring out what it is that
it was
really
more
makes,
like
what
it,
works and what doesn't. Because you often a lot of stuff is just stumbling around in the dark until you find something that works, and I bet that happens with like finding a character sometimes where you just keep trying different things until something hits
or
and
being
then you're,
lost
like,
in
that.
The woods at night.
That's probably why like The Simpsons. You get like this the idea where the first season the character is like fairly normal. Homer's fairly normal, one.
But like, his voice is all low and weird.
Yeah, it's all weird. And then over time, it gets very like narrows down what their traits are. And then over time, they take one trait of the character and exaggerate it more and more. And then the original character is lost because they're just doing this sort of focusing. And that's what Homer did. Now he's just a bunch of like, I'm Homer Simpson. I'm fat.
The Homer singularity.
The Homer the homularity. So the homularity. So, so that would just kind of make sense to go along with the lines of, as you're an actor, you're figuring out your role that you're playing. And over time you sort of streamline certain aspects and cut out the unnecessary shit. I don't know. But yeah, Brent Spiner is pretty cool though.
Yeah. And that does not ruin the episode for me, but it jumps out at me. This is one of those episodes, and you see it a lot in the early seasons, where it's cracking along, you're enjoying the story, everything's fun.
Do you ever say cracking good time?
Yeah, you're having a cracking good time. It's a ripping good time. Something just pops out at you, and you're just like, what? What the fuck was that? That was a little weird. And everybody does it at some point. All the actors early on.
I think that's how my issue with,
except for Riker,
with whenever I try to watch Babylon 5, and I never watched that much because I kept trying to watch it. But whenever the CG at the time of the ships would come out, I know it's not quite the same thing as what you're talking about cerebrally, but I'd get this sort of, my physical reaction is like, you know. And there's a lot of bad CG, and the CG, it's passable, but at the time it was just so jarring to me because I was used to Star Trek style stuff that was a little bit held back,
which at the time was primarily using models.
Yeah, right.
Babylon 5 was pioneering in the CG, but also,
so it could just be Babylon 5 was pushing forward a frontier, and I wasn't ready for
and
it.
And you wouldn't care so
maybe
much.
Maybe I wasn't ready for Babylon 5. You wouldn't. It was ahead of its time.
You wouldn't care so much about the CG now if you had ended up watching it, if you'd gotten into Babylon 5 at the time. It's similar to watching the original Star Trek, right? A lot of people who try to watch the original Star Trek now, even with the updated CG effects, sometimes they're like, I just can't, it's so difficult because of the costumes and the special effects. But if you watched it when you were young, your imagination wasn't bothered by those things, and your older self, mixed with some nostalgia, no doubt, it maybe can recognize that the special effects aren't very great, but that contextually, they still work for you, right? But sometimes I think you can miss that boat. I have as a goal prior to the end of my life to give repeated and good sporting chances to these franchises.
There's thousands of Babylon 5 episodes.
Because...
what about Farscape?
Farscape is another one where I recognize and respect the people who enjoy them. And so I really want to get into them. Mm-hmm. But the attempts I've made have not latched on to me. But I also must admit that the attempts I've made have maybe been insufficient largely to scheduling issues.
They had cool, like, creatures. They had cool looking
Farscape
aliens.
Had some cool stuff. Yeah, creatures and stuff.
It was something freaky that kind of scared me about
but
that. But
I
it was
would
awesome.
Argue
it was
a even, weirdo show. Yeah. Even having not seen most of Babylon 5, I would argue that as anyone who's a Deep Space Nine fan should watch Babylon 5.
Babylon 5.
Because of the interesting background history of the production and development of both Deep Space Nine and Babylon 5. I'm not going to go into the details here, because I have insufficient knowledge, but having read a number of articles, there's just a lot of interesting stuff going on about how both of those shows about space stations came out at around the same time. And there are some similarities. There are mostly a lot of differences, and they go in different directions. But that they are both centered around that sort of conceit of staying put and having to deal with the fact that you are not traipsing around the galaxy, going hopping from planet to planet or spatial anomaly to spatial anomaly. And there may be some interesting things to consider about why was that the case, that that concept coalesced in the early 90s and, you know, the late 80s and early 90s, people started getting interested in that. Maybe there's social changes, political changes, geopolitical change. Maybe there's things that influence that. Maybe it's a coincidence. Who knows? But that's why, even though I haven't seen it yet, do as I say and not as I do. Go watch Babylon 5 if you like Deep Space Nine. If you're only about the TNG, I don't think you got to bother. Don't worry about it. What are you even worried about?
Don't even worry.
Yeah, there's a lot of good shows. You know that Battlestar Galactica was pretty good. I never saw the original
The new Battlestar Galactica.
I never saw the original one or Lost. I wanted to see
the 4400 was good. And they're remaking the 4400.
I remember watching the original one as a kid, but I was a kid, so I didn't.
You should see that Buck Rogers show.
Yeah, I watched the hell out of that show.
You ever watch Time Tracks?
I remember it for some reason.
Yeah, Time Jacks was some ridiculous shit.
Speaking of Star Trek, Quantum Leap was an awesome show.
Quantum Leap was awesome.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
Yeah, and
last week,
Sam.
Last week. Was it last week or the week? No, it's the week before last
week. And then
week,
they had his...
We did Dear Doctor with Archer in his nice white shirt. Sipping on some iced tea.
Yeah.
Looking out the window.
Looking out.
Contemplating and shit.
Yeah, thinking about whether he should save that civilization or not.
But that's not this episode. This episode is Time Squared. Good old Captain Picard.
This is the podcast.
They had Archer and Scott Bakula. I forget the name of his partner in Quantum Leap. That dude.
The computer fella.
The dude who always had that Ziggy.
Dean Stockwell.
He had the Ziggy.
Yeah, Dean Stockwell's the actor.
Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah, Dean Stockwell. Okay, anyway.
I forget the name of the computer.
And he had like Lorenzo Music and Bill Murray. That overflip. That's not... That was... No, the Bill Murray Lorenzo Music thing is mind Mobius. It's just like...
Totally mind Mobius.
But this
but
is...
If you don't know what we're talking about, look it up. Bill Murray Lorenzo Music mind Mobius. put that into Google. You'll get everything you need.
Yeah.
Don't even worry about it.
So the thing with Dean Stockwell and Scott Bakula, though, that's just a simple... They were in a show together before, and then now Dean Stockwell made some appearances. It's like...
Yeah, he was on Enterprise.
It's like that happened on, I think, Everybody Hates Chris, and they had the one who played Dina or whatever in Martin. Sorry, that's getting really... Never mind. Okay, let's...
Who all out there watch the Fox Broadcasting Network in...
They should
circa 1993.
Yeah.
My aunt
should have called that show "Nobody Watches This Show."
Yeah.
I watched a lot of Martin.
I was talking about Everybody Hates Chris.
Oh, that I didn't get to see. I heard it was good, but I didn't get to see it.
Anyway,
so this is
it's got general TV
I like
topics.
Shenanay. For some reason, he played some kid sometimes. In the opening sequence, he'd bring out his characters like Shenanay and some kid who had snot coming out of his nose. And he'd do that trick where he would walk on his knees and have like make it look like he had shoes on his knees, so he was really short.
This is that part when we do a podcast within a podcast.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry. But never, and you guys never let me do the Green Acres.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, fried green tomatoes. I don't know. Green Acres. We could do a Green Acres podcast. You guys might be more down for a Green Acres podcast than a fried green tomatoes podcast.
No, definitely. That's not true.
Oh, you'd rather do fried green tomatoes?
Green Acres gives me the heebie-jeebies. Yeah. You know?
I watched the fuck out of some Green Acres. Reminded me of my family.
I remember watching... I was hanging out with this family, and we were watching... What show was it?
Green Acres.
And then they watched Petticoat Junction. Too.
Ooh, Petticoat Junction.
And I was like, what's Petticoat Junction?
That's like the sequel to Green Acres.
They're like, you don't know what Petticoat Junction is? And I was like, no. And it was just another one of those shows. And I was like, ugh. It's weird.
Man, you didn't get enough Nick at Night when you were a kid.
I watched a lot of Nick at Night.
But not enough, apparently.
I watched, like, the Donna Reed show, like, you...
Did you watch
My Three Sons?
Yeah, My Three Sons and that Patty Duke show. And
Apparently, Fred... What was his name?
Fred Willard?
No, the guy who did My Three Sons.
Fred McGuinn?
No, that's the guy from the Munsters.
The same guy.
No, it's a different... The My Three Sons guy is Fred McMurray.
Leave It to Beaver.
Fred McMurray is the My Three Sons
guy. Oh,
that's
right. I'm sorry.
And Fred McMurray was really... I mean, he did movies at that time, and I think I was listening to the Gilbert Gottfried podcast or something. He was talking about Fred. We've gone way off
base
here, but I'm going to finish this thought. Fred McMurray, they wanted him to do My Three Sons, but he mostly just liked playing jazz and like occasionally doing a movie.
I just want to play music, Dad.
I think he kind of made so much money in the movies. He was just like, I don't know. I bought a bunch of property and I play jazz or whatever. He just liked to jam out all the time.
That rules.
So he made some deal
with
them.
What instrument did he play?
I don't even remember, but it was cool. Whatever it was, apparently he was a brilliant musician.
Saxophone.
Like a proper, he just shows up at jazz clubs and can play on stage. Talented musician. So he made some deal where he's like, all right, I'll do the show, but you got to make it so I only have to like film like 2 days a week or something. Wow. And so they were like, all right. So I want to go back and watch that show again and see, because most of his scenes are him like sitting on the couch, like giving the boys some advice or something. And then it'll be like the boys and then like Uncle Fred or whatever, like getting into some shenanigans for a bit. And then Fred McMurray comes back and is like, oh, I see you got into some shenanigans. Did you learn a lesson? Anyway, it's got Nick at Night memories from Nick at Night. We'll return now to the It's Got Star Trek podcast and our discussion of Time Squared.
John Ritter.
No, we've returned.
Oh,
John Ritter is Three's Company and Three's Crowd.
He will never return.
Oh.
Not in the Ropers. He was not in the Ropers.
He was not in the Ropers, but he was in Three's a Crowd. That only lasted a season.
That was a good show. Me and my friend were obsessed with the girl on
there.
His name was like Vicky or something.
What, with Three's a Crowd?
Yeah, her name was Vicky.
All right, we're back into It's Got Television.
No, we got to stop this, man.
remember the Three's the Company where
Three's a Company or Three's a Crowd?
No, where Three's Company, where some robber left, I think it was in Chrissy's room or something, he left some like diamonds that he'd stolen.
And then
they're all like, oh my God, there's these diamonds. And Jack was all like, they're not real diamonds. Or so one of them, Janet was like, they're not real diamonds. If they were real diamonds, they'd cut the glass. And then they like scrape it across the mirror and it cuts it. And they're all, and then Jack is all like, oh.
And then someone only overhears like the most sketchiest part of their conversation and thinks something innocent is really bad. And then
Mr. Furley.
Yeah, I remember the cutting the diamond thing on the glass. Yeah. I remember one where they were like, they broke this thing. They thought they had, they didn't know if it was an original piece of vase artwork, and they got it and they looked at it and it broke and they put it together and they're like, it's a wand tie. It's an original wand tie. And they're like, wait, no, it's backwards. And they switch it around. Taiwan. And they go, made in Taiwan. And that's what the episode ended on.
And it's like, a good joke because I laughed at that.
Yeah. So
I mean, I'm declaring it's a good joke because, you know, I'm arrogant. You know, I have an arrogant presumption.
I was like, wand tie.
That I can adequately judge humor. Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay. That's enough of that.
What are we talking about, Star Trek? Should we get on? Is it Oz and M's time yet?
They should have.
I think it might be.
They should have floaty sick bay portable beds. Obviously, the budget couldn't handle it, but
they have them sometimes, even early on, but yeah, it's clearly.
Like the floaty thing.
Yeah. It's funny how, you know, like in the pilot episode, for example, you'll see stuff that you don't see again because it's like it was clearly expensive to do.
Yeah, because I mean, really, everything should be floating. That's when you have tractor beams and all this shit, why not just make everything float and then stay in still with, you know.
Also, do they have full gravity or why not make it 0.95 gravity, 0.8 gravity? Make it a little easier.
Yeah, they can change gravity. Like in DS9, there was that episode, what's her name, who lived on that planet and she had weak muscles. And so her room, they had to make the gravity.
Floaty
McGee.
Yes, that was one of those episodes where Dr. Bashir hits on one of his patients.
Yep.
Uncomfortable.
And it's kind of like, oh.
The 1990s.
It's kind of like, oh.
1990s. Kids, read about the 1990s.
Don't do it.
The Shuttlecraft 5, it was called the Elbaz, and it was named after this guy who was a scientist that worked on the Apollo program. His name is Farouk Elbaz, and he did a lot with studying the rocks that came back from the moon and planning where they were going to land on the moon. He's still around. He's just kind of old.
We should have him on the podcast.
And he got the idea of having, I guess, moon rocks on display that people can come up and touch and interact with.
I've done that.
And he got that because he's a Muslim, and he got that from when you go to, you take the pilgrimage and there's that black rock the black stone that people touch.
Yeah, at Mecca.
Yeah, at Mecca.
Yeah. Although the Irish also do the same thing with the Blarney Stone.
There's a Blarney Stone.
So that shuttle was called the Elbaz. Now, was there a thing where, was it the runabouts that were called named after rivers?
They were all rivers, like the Yankees.
The runabouts were. But so the shuttles, I wonder if there's a thing about shuttles.
They
being
do
named
different
after
things in different places. Like, I think on Lower Decks, weren't they named after, what was it, trees or something? They were all, I think they were all.
Yeah, something like that.
There's usually a theme on the ship.
I think the TOS Enterprise, it was like a Copernicus and a Galileo. And
this is that famous episode, the Galileo 7,
where
they're trapped on the planet.
You remember like...
Maybe I made up Copernicus, but there was definitely a Galileo.
Yeah, there was a guy named Galileo that did exist.
It's like how Doc Brown named his dog Einstein Copernicus. In 1985.
Right. I think I was just thinking of Doc Brown's dog.
But like in 1955, he's not Einstein.
Yeah, he's Copernicus.
But yeah, because like I guess Einstein, it's weird. I guess they think Einstein's not. Einstein was famous by 1955.
Yeah, totally.
Maybe just not famous enough for Doc Brown. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
When Picard gets zapped.
Anti-Semite.
When he gets zapped. First of all, why is that entity allowed to scan them, but they're not allowed to probe the entity?
Because it was supposed to be Q.
Yeah, okay. I guess there's really nothing I can say to that. So Picard got zapped, and Riker goes, like a rag in a dog's mouth. And I'd never really thought of that expression, but I guess it's just when a dog thrashes its head about. But like, I never thought of a rag. I always thought of it as like when a cute, stuffy, fluff toy. He should have said that, like a cute, stuffy, fluff toy in a dog's mouth.
Speaking of the shuttles.
I was doing that thing where I was running out of air. I was like, start talking like this because I'm running out of hair.
Is that a thing you do?
Everyone does it.
Is that something you like to do? Do you like to be asphyxiated?
I was doing that because I couldn't stop myself.
Is this performative? Is this performative in some sort of a...
Geordi goes up to the bridge and he's able to like... there's like a blank
panel
and you can put like whatever on there. Like, what do they have on there? Like, other than engineering,
it's whatever you need it to be.
Do they show movies on there when Geordi's not up there? Like, Geordi's not here. He's working on some shit. Let's just watch some movies.
They've just got Garth Marenghi's Dark Place in a loop on mute.
That's their TV where they get to watch the other part of the episode on.
Yeah, that's right.
But Geordi was saying, and I was asking about this with Dear Doctor about transferring over to the bridge.
That's not unusual. You can do that on a naval ship.
But I'm saying, my point at the time was like, these are all digital. Why do they need to
digital?
Why does it matter? But I understand separation of duties and all that. But duties, you got to separate your duties.
You put them in the toilet
on the shelf, and then smell them, and then put them in your German, and then so.
What?
So
he's referencing the fact that some German people like to examine their stool, and so there are those German toilets that have the little poop shelf on them.
Yeah,
it's like in the toilet poop shelf. It's
so when they're talking about shelf life, they mean something entirely different there. They mean the poop shelf. I'll put you on the poop shelf. That's what you tell people you're mad at, instead of like, I'll throw you out the window. I'll put you on the poop shelf.
Yes, that old German phrase. I'll put you on the poop shelf.
Yeah, you should say that in German when you visit.
I don't remember the word for shelf.
Oh, then it's all for naught.
You were making some sort of point.
My point, yeah, thank you for helping me bring it home, bring it back to the ranch. Geordi did that in this episode where he was like, transfer engineering to the bridge. He did that. And I was talking about earlier about like,
yeah,
that
when
was
I
weird.
Saw it, I was thinking about you because you mentioned that in our discussion of Dear Doctor a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, and so he to answer that kind of answers your question is they just take whatever duties they have anywhere they want on the ship,
just
and they can
leave
watch
it off if you want,
and they can like watch videos of the other person's doing funny things when people are away, I guess.
But it can be like an extra.
But in the future, people,
or it can be like an extra.
In the future, people aren't entertained by other people like doing funny things in the future.
Apparently not on the Enterprise D on. Other, or at least in the 24th century, because we definitely see people entertaining themselves in the 23rd century
totally,
and in the 22nd century, because Discovery and Enterprise both have people watching movies.
Right. Old movies.
But like
on Enterprise, they have movie night.
But I was thinking about how Phlox in that episode was talking about how, making the joke, it's like, Cutler was saying to him, hey, Phlox, don't you have movies at home? He's like, we used to, but we got rid of them when we found out life was more interesting. Now, is that sort of like saying in the future, life actually will be more interesting than TV? Or are they just saying they're enlightened?
Well,
at the
time, they were implying they were enlightened.
Yeah, see, that's the thing.
I mean, well, one flavor of enlightened, if you consider that to be...
They said their
that's
own
exactly
lives.
How I felt,
they thought
too.
Their own lives.
I don't think you're necessarily enlightened. My argument is...
I thought that maybe things, like going through space is just so fun that you would never even want to watch TV anymore.
You could watch TV shows about going through dimensions.
Yeah, I mean, so you gotta sit on the toilet sometimes.
Yeah, you do. You make an excellent point there, Dan.
What are you gonna do on the toilet?
Do
right.
Do
other odds and ends. I think I was trying to say before, it took them a weirdly long time to discover that shuttle was a duplicate shuttle, right? They were all like, this
they
is
were looking
1701D.
Wait a second.
It says number 5.
It's like, couldn't you see that from over there? Like,
didn't you already
had to
know
walk
the name
up
of
to
it? Says Elba.
Didn't you already know the name of your one ship in your like fucking shuttle bay?
Yeah. It was somewhat, and it kind of goes to what I was saying earlier about there seems to be some parts where they stretched it out.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I watched TNG not from the initial. I started watching it probably in 1989.
I think that was also in part
time.
Just to tell the audience, though, to point it out for the audience, obviously.
Well, yeah, of course. But
pandering to the audience, right?
Pandering is not even the right word. I guess it's a pretty good word, but I'm just like, it's
like they could have done it more compactly and more smartly, but they just chose to make it all plotting. And
or they could have just been like, immediately been like, holy shit, that's the same shuttle as over there.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to say they padded it out, but I get the impression.
I get the impression they padded it out a little bit.
When you consider the fact that the writer had a script, had a whole scene with Q, a whole deal with Q at the end, and then that's cut out by Roddenberry says no. So you can imagine the writer being like, well, fuck, I got to add like another 2 minutes of the episode.
Did Roddenberry not like Q that much or something?
No, Roddenberry came up with Q, as far as I know. Roddenberry, what the fuck does he care? He didn't want him in this particular episode because Q that comes up soon, I think.
Yeah.
I forget if it's next episode or it's coming up real soon.
It's a couple ahead, yeah.
And I think the writer was thinking, hey, let's bring back Q for a bit here, and then we can have the full episode about Q. And Roddenberry was like, no, I want the surprise to be in that episode. And I can understand that argument. I can see that. I'm not going to second guess Roddenberry on that. But I also can recognize how a writer can both be aggravated and have difficulty coming up with being like, well, the whole story is kind of structured on this kind of surprise ending that I had in there, and now I've got to fluff it out a little bit.
And now it's not even the same story.
It's not quite the same story. It changes the tenor of the story.
When they find the future Picard on the future shuttle, and then they try to communicate with the Picard, they're like, Captain, where are you? And he's like, well, where else should I be? I'm on the
bridge. Yeah, that was he's all like smart annoyed. Ass. He's yeah.
Like, where should I be?
Yeah, it's another smart ass Picard
it's
moment.
Like, well, you're usually like at your ready room or like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was really, is emotive, the right word? I don't know.
Early seasons Picard is a little bit more brusque.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
a little more openly arrogant.
The music was weird because
the music is fucking great. It's all synth music.
Yeah, and yeah, that's what's awesome. All synth music, and it's all overly dramatic music sometimes. In the opening before the song and before the opening music, they go like Riker's like, set course to intercept. Data says, estimate intercept in 3 minutes, and then it goes intercept in 3 minutes, and we don't even know, there's nothing that indicates that it's the threatening, that's just right. This thing, it's like, hey, there's a thing over there, we'll be there in 3 minutes.
They went to a full orchestra in season three, and so in season one and two they relied primarily, other than the opening and closing scenes
like the one with Trip Tucker and T'Pol, where they were greasing,
without clothing.
So where they were getting the anti-sickness cream on each other.
Yes, I know the one you're talking about.
I know about that one.
But I think we discussed that in episode, what is that, like 5 of the podcast, probably?
Yeah.
Full circle, baby.
Probably.
Carter's like, you go far enough out, you see yourself again.
But
that's what's happening right now.
But they use that synth music, and I'm glad they went to the orchestration. I like the orchestration better in a lot of ways. However, I do love the weird vibe you get, because it does make this already kind of creepy and intense episode more so because of this crazy, obviously synth music. It's not even just that it's synth music. It's that they're using artificial style. They're not a lot of the instruments they're using are not meant to mimic real instruments. They're using weird space sounds and stuff like that. It gives it a distinctly different flavor to basically the remainder of Star Trek from then on forward through to today, where even though in Discovery in particular,
through to today,
we're hearing some really interesting music, and a lot of it is synthetic, but it is nevertheless,
you're playing that a different
vibe,
music.
You know, it's a more of an orchestral vibe to it, right?
Yeah, that's generally the case, you know, with a lot of music, earlier stuff in the 80s, it's got that sort of different. It just sounds like robot music.
And what's intriguing about this is we basically get 2 years of Star Trek that's like that. Because TOS was all full orchestra. TNG season 3 onward, and Deep Space Nine and Voyager and Enterprise onward are full orchestras, maybe in some cases helped along by some computer bits, but basically orchestral
stuff. I'm thinking about this episode. There's an episode in like first season or something where something spooky is happening, and there's these like bell sounding synths going like doon 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 doon.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know, and it's like, yeah, I can't even imitate it right, but yeah, it's
well, because we're not synths.
We're not robot music.
We're not robots.
Yeah.
That's proof right there.
I'm a robot.
What's a robot?
A robot. Oh, man. In last week's episode, there was a whole business about robots.
Oh, that's right.
Because it was Ephraim and Dot that we discussed in last week's episode. So we kept talking about robots.
Oh, yeah. We got really, like, fixated on that.
We got robotated.
Robotated.
Riker, during breakfast, mentions his father, right? They're like, something like, why do you know to cook? Yeah. And he's like, because my father was never home, so I had to cook myself or whatever.
The episode after this is
exactly
the one that deals with, yeah.
With his father. And that was interesting because that reminded me how...
That's right. That's the next
in
one.
In Voyager, I forget the name of the... The Voyager episode we saw where Dear Doctor. And what was the alien?
No, Dear Doctor is the Enterprise episode. You're talking about
Message in a Bottle.
Message in a Bottle.
Where
the doctor goes to
the Alpha Quadrant?
Yes. So what was that other species of aliens that we get introduced to?
The Hirogen.
Right. And so just like he mentions his father in this episode, and then we go to his father next episode. In that one, we see the Hirogen for the first time, and then lo and behold, it's like the big plot for the next episode.
Right.
So it's like interesting one episode setup for the next next week's thing, which when I was watching at the time, I didn't notice stuff like that. I did know it's like, oh, I remember maybe they mentioned that sometime, but I don't know. But it just didn't
occur to me. You can see where they were setting things up.
Yeah.
And I agree that as much as I've watched every TNG episode many, 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 many times, right? But as you get older and as you start looking at things in a more structured way, you do start to notice these things a little bit more clearly. I think especially since we've gotten in, we're so familiar now with serialized TV where the point of it is to pay attention and get the clues.
And this, and
so now we're getting the clues that we missed before.
And we think of how TNG, we're like, well, TNG is not serial.
It's parallelized.
It's not seriable, whatever.
It's episodic.
Yeah, that's right. So Star Trek, we always think of TNG as episodic, which it is, but then we also talk about it's episodic, but there's elements that themes
flavor bits.
And it's stuff like that kind of plant it in your head sometimes, and maybe it's like you don't realize it at the time.
And they know enough. The next episode is the Icarus Factor, right? Isn't that what it is?
Yeah.
The Icarus Factor with his dad, where they do that weird judo, where they're all talking about how dangerous it is, but it doesn't look that dangerous when they're jousting. They're all like, oh, you should.
Well, they got special
that.
Suits on, right?
Oh, man, I can't remember. It had such a funny name that particular, they called it a martial art. Some sort of space martial art.
Oh, space, that's right. They did have some space martial art. Zero G fighting. That'd be crazy.
With their little business. But to add on to this particular conversation about the ongoing stuff that you didn't notice when in your first few watch throughs of TNG are things like background characters, right? Like, so we know about Nurse Ogawa and certain background characters that are a little bit more prominent. You wouldn't even necessarily call them background characters, or like
O'Brien,
tertiary characters. O'Brien definitely starts out like that and then grows.
O'Brien and Pulaski both watches,
but
both watched the after effect of Picard being murdered. They both saw that.
Yeah, they're both fucked up.
They know that about
O'Brien's
that.
Always fucked up by shit.
Yeah, and you're not allowed to talk about the fact that Picard murdered someone.
He just phased himself.
Picard calls. He's like, come down to the shuttle bay or whatever, but he doesn't stick around. He's just like, no, I'm going to the bridge.
Yeah, he's
like,
also shady.
You guys deal with it.
He's so shady.
You clean his shit up.
He's like, okay, don't come
doctor,
in.
Doctor, tend
he's
to
like,
your patient.
It's like, yeah, it's like, don't come in here. Don't come in here. Don't bother me. Okay, now I'm done my business. And I was like, okay, come in. And then you leave.
And if you make the assumption he knew the other Picard was dead, then him saying, doctor, tend to your patient is some real fucked up shit.
He's being a dick.
Yeah, I shot him.
Yeah.
But, there was something I found out only today that I did not know before, and I love this, right? Because I always try to look at, you know, are there any special guests or are there any actors that we should be familiar with in terms of their other work in Star Trek? And I knew this was a fairly contained episode, so I wasn't expecting to find special guests, but I always look just in case. And I saw a name that jumped out at me because I was like, I recognize that name. Why do I recognize that
name? You sounded like Jim Gaffigan.
I don't wear blue. I don't say fuck.
The burger is it's all weird.
I like Jim Gaffigan.
Yeah, he's really funny.
He's brilliant, actually. I don't mean to mock him. But
yeah, he's really funny.
But the name was Guy Vardaman.
Guy Vardaman. That's a fucking warrior's name.
It is a fucking warrior's name. I agree. And I was like, why do I recognize
it's like
that
Mad
name?
Mad Mardigan.
And I know why now I recognize
Kel
his name.
Barnes.
It's because it's one of those names you keep seeing as you're researching episodes. You keep seeing pop up because this guy. All right. Get a load of this. This guy, he played Darian Wallace in this episode. And it turns out that Darian Wallace is a background character who was on TNG basically throughout the entire run of TNG and into he was even in the movie Generations, right? So he's just like an Enterprise D background character. And he also often served as a hand model. Right, so when they do
hand model,
yeah, when they do like close-up shots where you just see a hand,
they have their own hand models and on TV shows. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So like
it's stunt hands.
Well, it's because like if somebody's touching a control panel, or you know pushing buttons or something like that, then
that was his hand.
Not always, but there were many instances where it was his hand actually doing that. Because why bring the actor in to shoot that insert shot, right? But not only was he a regular background character who had a name, Darian Wallace, and a hand model, he also served as Gene Roddenberry's research assistant until Gene Roddenberry died. He continued on the show well after that, but he was the person Roddenberry would have task him with various things to look up, and he would go to the library or wherever, or go to the Paramount, whatever, and look up whatever it was that Roddenberry was
Krell
looking
Barnson,
for.
What's his name?
Krell Vardigan?
Yeah, I know. It's Guy Vardaman. What did you say? Krell Varnison? So Vardaman, yeah, he
shoot some Varnus and eat it later.
And he played a bunch of other characters as well. He played various aliens here and there. He was also Data's photo stand-in. So he would oftentimes, if you see Data from the back, or if they needed Data, if they needed somebody to stand in the spot where Brent Spiner would be for the blocking while they're rehearsing a shot or something or setting up the camera, that was his job. So this guy was all over the place, particularly on TNG, which I love reading about that. Oh, and most importantly, when I looked this guy up, I found him on Memory Alpha. And Memory Alpha has this thing for all the characters where they have a whole section that's memorable quotes. They have that for the episodes and they have that for the characters. And you've got all your, you know, Worf would be like, you know, I guess today is a good day to die. That sort of stuff, right? It's a long list of quotes. For Guy Vardaman's character of Darian Wallace, the memorable quotes section has two entries. The first entry is, "Aye, sir." And the second entry is "good," which I think might be the extent of all his quotes.
That's great. He owns those. He owns those quotes now. He owns like, he owns good
seasons of the show. And
every time
and
you
movie.
Say good, you have to credit him. You have to be like, I got that from.
It's like that and lady way, that was the cashier in Seinfeld at the diner, and she was just always in the background. Yeah,
and this guy, the line "good," he says that in the next phase. Right, which we discussed, I don't know, what was that, 4 or 5 weeks ago or something? Not too long ago, we discussed the next phase.
Oh, yeah.
Scroll down the podcast list and you'll find it. So you can see, keep an eye out for Darian Wallace.
He's going to be a big
one. He's like a handsome-looking fella. Just look out for a handsome-looking fella who says "good" in the next phase. In this episode, I don't think he says anything. I think he's just standing there.
There was another person I saw in the credits. I don't remember the first name, but the last name was, and they're going places probably. It was someone Snodgrass.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the producers.
Yeah, right?
Was it Emily Snodgrass?
Melinda
Snodgrass.
Sure, I knew it was a something like that. I know it was a traditionally feminine sounding name.
Yeah, I believe she did several Star Treks.
Traditionally. All right. Any other odds and ends before we close things down?
Hell no, that's it, man.
No,
Jesse's exhausted all his odds and ends, but Dan is typing away furiously.
Exhausted in general.
No, his computer notes.
So I'm always like looking at the star dates.
Always.
Right? And so the star date for this episode is 42679.2. The point two is what you have to remember. Then we find
all
out
right, that we're marking that down. Point two.
And
point
then
two.
For future Picard, P2, he comes from a time with star date. They say this 42679.5. That's a difference of 0.3. So 6 hours in the future is 0.3 star dates. So I guess you could use that to figure out what star dates to maybe they
crack the code, Dan.
You know, because I've never actually looked on the internet. It's so easy for me to do it. And I haven't. Like, how to work star dates? Because you know someone's got some shit on how that shit
works. I'm sure there's a multiple.
Oh, there is.
There's no way to make them all actually work because they're inconsistent.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering is there's probably inconsistent rules, but that seems like a pretty solid.
Even when they were trying to do it right, there's still inconsistency.
But according to this, 0.3 star dates.
0.3
star dates is equal to 6 hours of us time. So just use that for math.
So that, I think, should do it for this entertaining, if a little bit rough around the edges.
That's what you said about last podcast.
No, not the podcast, the episode.
The episode.
Oh.
The podcast
is brilliant,
okay,
as always.
Okay, never mind.
As always. One might presume finally polished once in a while, silk. I mean, you're just going to have a dud here and there. One might presume that, but
I like those odds.
It just hasn't happened yet.
As our audience knows, I mean, we're on episode 90, and not a single episode is a dud.
Feeling findy.
Can you imagine that? Not one single episode is below a 10 rating on a scale of 1 to 10.
I sure can't think of one off the top of my head.
Not a single one.
Not a single one.
Not a single one.
No way, man.
All right. And we
100%.
Encourage new listeners to go back and listen to our back catalog and confirm that for yourself. And if you disagree...
They've already done that.
If you disagree, you can contact us at... What was it again?
Go fuck yourself.
feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. That's the email address for you old fashioned types. For your newfangled types, your kids that are too young to be listening to this, but listening anyway.
Because they're naughty.
We're not on TikTok.
They're on Santa's naughty list.
And we're not on Glib Glob.
They're not getting any presents. They're getting cold.
Isn't TikTok
stocking.
Like a minute or something?
For listening to us.
We never make it on TikTok.
You're thinking of the Vines or whatever they're
those
called.
I don't know. It
was ridiculous when Vines went out of business because it was so popular. They just probably had poor business or something, I guess.
Yeah, that's what happens in the world, you know? That's so a dot-com bubble all over again. Uh-oh. Another thing that these kids don't know about. They didn't have to live through the dot-com bubble. Oh, everyone's always talking about September 11th. But what about the dot-com bubble?
When that bubble burst.
Or the Y2K.
And when
fuck Y2K. Shit, that was some terrifying shit.
And when people were like saying like Amazon, selling books online, psh, whatever. And
more
then like,
whatever,
you know,
books online.
What? Nobody would even want to do that when you can go to a store.
Yeah, you can just walk into the store.
Until this kills
you. You can just buy a book. You can drive, you can get in the car and drive to the store.
Why would I do that? Why would I order it?
You can go look around the bookstore and then not find the book you want. And then go talk to the person at the desk and they're confused about which book you're looking for. And then they say it's on back order.
And then you leave and you think they really have that book back there somewhere.
Yeah.
They got coffee though at the bookstore.
Yeah, that's pretty tight. But you can get coffee through Amazon too.
You can just go get coffee from your kitchen.
It's convenient. You
can walk into a store, grab a bunch of shit, and leave, and you're not stealing because it just charges your card.
Oh, those new Amazon stores. We were talking about the TikTok and the other stuff you guys derailed.
Talking about the TikTok and the Vines.
But we're not on that. We don't have a Vine. We don't have TikTok. But we do have Twitter. At It's Got Started.
We don't have a Vine.
We have
kids.
We have ask your grandparents about Vine. We have. We have Instagram at It's Got Star Trek. We are on Facebook at It's Got Star Trek, or just type in It's Got Star Trek. We're on YouTube, and an increasing number of people are enjoying watching, or I should say, listening to our podcast while watching a static
Spotify.
Image on YouTube. So
I came home the other day, and my wife was watching us on Spotify.
You keep saying watching. You can't watch anything on Spotify.
But it's on a screen.
I know what you mean.
Something is on a screen,
yeah. But okay.
She was staring at the screen.
I guess it's the same thing. So Spotify, YouTube.
But it's like, might as well be off, right?
Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all the popular podcast providers you can find us. Which you probably know because you're listening to us right now, unless you came to the website, www.itsgotstartrek.com, which is possible. Or maybe you just didn't know that because you don't usually listen to the end of the episode, which means you miss out on the fun little bonus.
Maybe
little
you watch.
Bonus clip that happens at the end of every episode of the podcast.
There's a bonus clip?
There's always a bonus clip.
Yeah,
at
you're
the
just
end
not
episode.
In.
There's always a bonus, funny bonus clip at the end of the
funny
episode.
Funny bonus.
And part of the fun is funny guessing. Bonus. Is guessing as the listener
guessing
they can
what's
engage in the podcast.
About.
They can be like, which clip are they going to pick? Which clip are they going to pick to play at the end of the podcast?
Which
that's funny. And it's really hard sometimes to pick a clip that's funny when some of the episodes are deeply tragic. And
don't
upsetting.
I know it, Patrick?
So listen to the end. Hear the clip. That's the prize you get for hearing us and incessantly talk about
the best
Twitter
kind of
Instagram
prize is a surprise. Hey, this episode was all about you
the
know
best kind of prize you, is an enterprise.
You ever hear that? That's true. You ever hear that thing about people talking about doing the same shit over and over again, expecting different results? And like, I always thought that was funny because they say that's the definition of insanity. But that's not the I mean, who says that's the definition of insanity? That's not.
I think
what's
Einstein
in the
might have said.
Yeah, I think maybe Einstein said that or something. That's what I hear. So
it's science but, talk,
but,
man.
That's like what time travel episodes are right?
Yeah,
they're
right,
just like
right.
A bunch of like you know, doing the same thing over and over again.
Right. I think people are going to feel like they've traveled through a significant amount of time listening to this.
Hey, you're the one.
I know, no, it's
one in the one.
It's all good.
You're one in the two with the three.
It'll get edited out.
But B, edited out.
It's going to get edited out.
It's all good. We'll cut this down to a nice, clean 20 minutes.
Podcast got edited out.
Clean, sleek 20 minutes.
But as a reminder,
some shows do.
Dan got edited
next
out.
Week, we are going to be discussing the first two episodes of Lower Decks Season 2. Whatever they were called. Strange Energies.
Spencer and Frankie.
That's the one I'm intrigued by. But anyway, you'll hear from us approximately the same time next week on the same podcast feed that you've been used to all these years. And I got nothing else. You got anything else, guys?
That's it for us.
All right, that's gonna do it. Well, you'll hear from us.
Right, you are, Patrick.
Next week.
Hmm.
A cook is only as good as his ingredients.
Delicious.